France. On the 30th of September 1905. Not of French parents completely. I was a French citizen automatically because all children born in France are automatically French citizens. But my mother was English. My father was, I would say, a Mediterranean man. His mother was from Lombardy. Now, he is Greek by his father, but his father had taken French nationality long ago. So, Greek, Italian, and English. And I was born of already aged parents. My mother was 40, my father 45, 46. And I don't know if this detail is interesting or not, but it seems I weighed 900 grams, you say not even a kilo, at birth. I always was, as a youth, as a young person, an admirer of ancient Sparta in Greece. And my mother used to tell me, if you had been born in Sparta, you would have been thrown in the Chiavis at birth. The Chiavis is a cliff between two mountains, and babies that were not fit to be either warriors or mothers of warriors were just dropped into that at birth at the order of the Spartan magistrates in antiquity. They brought up only the fit ones. And of course, I would have been considered as no good for nothing. 900 grams, not even a kilo, puff, in the Chiavis. But I was born in France, in democratic France. I was allowed to grow up. I was the only child. And very early, I liked the conversation, especially with grown-up people. I never really liked to play with other children. I found the games silly. I liked discussions. I liked putting questions, queer questions, like this one, for instance, what is fire made of? Or things like that. And, of course, I was brought up in the Christian religion. I was christened. My parents were married in the Anglican church. I was christened there, and when there was a Greek church in Lyon, I wouldn't say rechristened because there's no rechristening, but I was given the unctions of the Greek church in that church. Anyhow, I grew up between the English friends of my mother and the increasing Greek colony of Lyon. Mostly Greeks of Asia Minor, especially from 1922 onwards. Now, I have remembrances of three wars. The Balkan War, four even. The Balkan War, 1912-1913. I remember the news we had of it. I remember the part I took in it, how glad I was when the Greeks took Salonika on the 26th of October 1912. It was the main day of St. Dimitri, was the patron of the town. And I remember all the kind of things like that, all the facts of the first, the Balkan War. I resented my mother wearing a ribbon on her hat. Bulgarian colors, they were the fashion in France. I said, why do you wear Bulgarian colors? Bulgarians are enemies. They were in the Balkanic War. Anyhow, then the first one. 1940. And then the Greco-Turkish War, the one that influenced me the most, the Greco-Turkish War 1920-22, and then the Second World War. The First World War, but I remember it. I remember the school. I went to a Catholic school, I was sent to a Catholic school, and they would tell us, now you must put money in the box in front of the Holy Virgin Mary, for her to bless the Allies. I didn't like that. Why should she bless the Allies? She wasn't French. She wasn't English. What does she do with this war? I tell my mother. I said, my mother, she was from Palestine. Why should she bless the Allies and make them win the war? My mother said, don't put any money. Of course, that's nonsense. Don't put any money in the box. All right. And then I had many things, many answers that they didn't quite satisfy me in any way. I was always questioning and always wanting to think for myself. Something happened in 1914. They told us, the Germans, you see, they are real barbarians. They went through Belgium, never asking permission to the Belgian government. I said, all right, if you don't ask permission and you go through a country without it, then you are a barbarian. Quite right. But in 1950, the French landed in Salonika in Greece without the permission of the Greek government. And they started not only doing that, but they started deepening the cliff between the Prime Minister Venizelos and the King of Greece, Constantine the First. Constantine, who was the brother-in-law of the German Kaiser. I said, why did they do that? They are barbarians if they did that. If the Germans are barbarians for marching through Belgium, the French must be barbarians for landing in Greece. And the English must be barbarians for blockading the coasts of Greece in 1916 for 10 months and not allowing anything in. If you don't allow goods to come into Greece, Greece will starve. It only produces olive oil, raisins, tobacco, and that's all. About all. You can't live on that. So, what is this hypocrisy? And when the brawl started in early December 1916 between Greeks and French sailors that had landed there, and there was a big row in France, 54 of the sailors were killed in a brawl with the Greeks. I was indignant. That put me absolutely against the Allies in the First World War. I took some chalk from the school, and in the evening, when nobody could see me, I went and wrote on a wall in my native town, "Down with the Allies. Long live Germany." I didn't know what Germany was in those days. Germany was just a patch of color on a map. But still, I thought Germany would never be so hypocritical as to tell tales to me that some people are barbarians for doing a thing, and the people who do the same thing on the other side, they are not barbarians, they're fighting for liberty and they're fighting for all the highest values. Another thing I didn't like was the French Revolution. I never liked the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the idea of equality. I didn't like it. I found that something beautiful is not the equal of the same kind of thing ugly. I thought that the strong cannot be the equal of the weak, etc. There were some natural values above all that. And then something happened. Sometime just before the French World War, the First World War, and that lasted during the war and after the war, and that was my weekly visit to the Musée Guimet. It was an Asiatic museum, or rather, it was the Lyons branch of the big Asiatic Museum of Paris. I was playing, making mud pies in the public garden not far from there. It started raining. My mother told me we must take shelter somewhere. We are going to take shelter in the museum. So we went to the museum, took shelter from the rain. My mother asked me, would you like to see antiquity or animals? I said, I'd rather see antiquity because the animals are stuffed. I don't like to see stuffed animals. Like to see live ones. All right, we saw Egyptian antiquities, Assyrian antiquities, and then we went upstairs. In the staircase there were Tibetan paintings and Siamese paintings. I liked all that. I liked the smell of sandalwood and incense. It was about the place. And I asked, can I come here every Sunday? My mother said, yes. Every Sunday from 2 to 5 it's open. You can come here. And I went there every Sunday for 10 years, or nearly. And I learned there all I knew in those days about Asia. And Asia never seemed strange to me. It was quite familiar. Another thing that I remember, that is long before, that is of 1912. 1912, my first film. First time I saw a film. My mother wanted to see Corvallis. It was passed on, the cinema, the Royal Cinema in Lyon. And she wanted to put me in somebody else's house. She wanted to go alone. Nobody wanted me, because I was too naughty. So she had to take me with her. And she took me. And I saw Corvallis. Of course, course, I didn't understand the intrigues of the film, but I saw marble staircases, Roman ladies draped in pleaty material, going up and down with a Roman hairdress. Everything beautiful and harmonious. Of course, there were the lions in the arena and the crustaceans, but I admired the lions. I loved them. Great big cats. I didn't find any objection to meeting people. They're great big cats. I thought that if I had been in the arena, I would have carried them. And when I came out, I told my mother, I said, when I grow up, I want to be a Roman. I said, why do you want to be a Roman? Because they are beautiful, you see, mommy. They are beautiful. They are. I like their dress. And now, after so many decades, when I see myself draped in a sari, I find it something like the dream of a child six realized. Another thing that struck me in this film was the newsreel. The newsreel was about the sinking of the Titanic. The Titanic sunk, I think, on the 12th of April, 1912. And I saw the sinking in the newsreel. And somebody told us, the speaker told us, that there was an English lady that was not allowed to get into the lifeboat because she had a dog, a little dog. They said, you can come in, but not your dog. She said, I'd rather go and be drowned with my dog than come in without it. And I remembered that. When I came home, I said to my mother, now look how illogical, look how stupid. The lady might be weighing 50 kilos. Say the dog, 10 kilos. They refuse the lady with the dog. That is 60 kilos. And if a human being comes along weighing 95 kilos, they'll take him. Look at the illogical thing. If they want to save many, many people, they should save only the children and let the grown-ups die in the sea. That's their logic. They are against their own logic. I don't like them, mommy. I don't like them. That was one of the things I said when I was six. And then, of course, time passed. From the Catholic school, I was put to the ordinary council school. It was all for the values of the French Revolution. I was told a lot about that. But I was much more inclined to think myself Greek than anything else. Even England didn't attract me as much as Greece. And Greece, not because of ancient Greece, and I would put stress on that. It is not so much, of course, I loved ancient Greece. I loved Sparta. But it is not so much ancient Greece as modern Greece of my times and modern Greece of the Independence War, 1821-1830, that attracted me. What I liked in my contemporary Greece was this. They replied to those who told them that they should join the war on the Allied side to become big, to become great in territory. They replied, we are small but honorable. Greece, alas. Elasine nekri ala endimos, nekri ke endimos, small and honorable. I like that expression very much. And then I like some episodes of recent Greek history, like that of 1799, the Souli episode. These Greek women of the village of Souli fighting the Turks, and when they saw the Turks had surrounded the rock on the top of which they were, and the men fighting below were practically all killed. The alternative was the Turkish harem or death. They started a dance. They took each other's hands and they made a dance around the rock, on the top of the rock. And they sang also a song that is popular in Greece today. I could sing it. And each time one neared the cliff, she threw herself below. With her child, if she had a child, or with her children, if she had more than one. And they all, 250 of them, they all died like that. I found that episode of modern Greek history quite uplifting. And I liked it. I liked to be the feel myself, the compatriot of these women. Anyhow, time passed. The First World War came to an end. I was on the German side because of the hypocrisy of the Allies, because of what they told me. These were barbarians and these were not. These were fighting for themselves and these were fighting for democracy. I said, well, I don't like that kind of deux poids, deux mesures, two weights and two measurements. The war came to an end, and I remember, as something awful, the screams of the crowd in the streets. L'Allemagne payera. Germany will pay. Germany must pay. Poor Germany, she was crushed completely. Austria too. And still, they were screaming against her. She must pay, she must pay, she must pay. I hated that kind of insistence on the enemy's defeat. It was not, it was, what do you call it? It was not chivalrous. It hurt my feeling of chivalrous. Another thing that shocked me very much after the First World War was the fact that they sent to Germany, I had heard of that, all the dark troops of Senegal. The occupants of Germany were not French, they were Senegalese. And there was, I knew there was a resistance, and I was admiring the resistance. I didn't know much about it, but I knew what was told in the papers. And always this idea of humiliating the country that had been defeated. When it has been defeated, finished. Do like the ancients did. Well, I used to compare the Allies and the Germans to the heroes of the Trojan War. I knew a lot about the Trojan War, of course. I felt it as though it was a contemporary war, although it was 3,200 years behind our times. After the battle, the heroes were mixed together. They did not have any grudge against each other. I would have liked the Allies to show that kind of spirit, but they were anything but chivalrous. And then, slowly, the Hitler movement took place. I didn't know much about it in those days. I was 14 in 1920. On the 24th of February 1920, the party was founded in Munich. All right. Slowly, slowly, I started finding out that there was a German patriot fighting for his country, fighting against the Versailles Treaty. That is to say, he was the opponent of these frenzied people that I had seen in the street saying, L'Allemagne doit payer, l'Allemagne payera. Germany must pay, Germany will pay. I liked him. I liked him as a foreign leader, but that was about all. And then I heard of his aim. His aim was all Germans in one state. I liked that. I liked that for the very reason that I found that it was this on the German, transposed in the German plane. It was my own idea. I had been brought up, I had lived with the idea, they call in Greek, megali idea, the great idea of all Greeks, those of Greece that had already been free, those of the Greeks of Thrace, those of the Greeks of the coast of Asia Minor, and the Asian coast, the coast of the Black Sea, Constantinople. In those days, Constantinople had more than 500,000 Greeks in it. It was a Greek town, practically. All those would be in one state, the reconstruction of the Byzantine Empire, with Constantinople as the capital. I wanted that. And I said to myself, well, if there's a German that wants the same for his country, good luck to him. I'm all for it. And especially I didn't like the Allies. I never liked the victors of the First World War. So much the better. And I used to follow whatever I heard of him. And the first great thing I heard of him was the putsch of the 9th of November, 1923. I was in Athens at that time. I spent the afternoon of the day, 9th of November, on the Acropolis. I remember that. And the next day it was in the papers. The next day I heard of it. And my reaction was, pity he didn't succeed. That would have been a fine lesson for these swine. Excuse me. And the lady that in whose house I said that, a Swiss lady called Mademoiselle Moore, she said to me, and who, if you please, do you call these swine? I said, the Allies, man. I don't like them. I wish he had won. I wish he had won, really, I wish he had won. Anyhow, that passed. Mademoiselle Moreau didn't like me, of course, but I couldn't care less. And then in 1920 already, before this had been the Greek-Turkish War, 2022, and I knew that those former allies of the First World War had helped the Turks, or more or less showed indifference, and they had told the Greeks to go on and on and on and conquer Asia Minor, but they never helped them, not even the British. As far as the French, when Mr. Franklin Bouillon signed a treaty of alliance with the Turks in March 1921 during one of the Greek offensives in Asia Minor. And I said to myself, they tore up our treaty of Cyber that was just, that gave back at least some Greek territory to Greece. They tore it to pieces. And they started saying in 1920 already, after the return of King Constantine to Greece, after the Greek elections against Venizelos, they started saying, all right, we'll tear the Treaty of Sèvres into two pieces. Why shouldn't the Treaty of Versailles and why shouldn't the Treaty of Saint-Germain have been torn into two pieces also? If they don't respect our Treaty of Sèvres, why should I respect the Treaty of Versailles? Good for Hitler, who was risen against him. I was all on his side because he was against the Treaty of Versailles. I consider the Treaty of Versailles an infamy, especially compared to the Treaty of Sèvres that was not anything but bad, it was quite just. And I said, if he wants all Germans in one state, well, I want all Greeks in one state, good for him. But I did not yet call him my Führer. He was the Führer of the Germans. And I liked the Germans. Although I had never met any. I met one. The first German I met, I must speak of him. It was one Geisler. I wonder if he's alive still. That was just after the First World War. 1918. For months and months, in 1919, there were German prisoners in France. And a man called Monsieur Lagrillon was the head of a camp near Lyon. They were building the foundations of a hospital, it still exists. It's called Grange Blanche. And this Mr. Lagrillon invited my father and my mother and myself to visit the camp one day, on Sunday. And when we were in the camp, he told my father, he said, your wife is English, isn't she? And your daughter speaks English. Well, we have a German prisoner that speaks English too. Would you like to meet him? My mother said, yes, of course, I'd like to meet him. So in came one of the prisoners, a tall man, red hair, red blonde, with very aristocratic bearing and gold-rimmed spectacles. And he presented himself, I don't know if it's Geisler or Gessler or something like that. And my mother spoke to him, and she was a pacifist.